Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Two of the Israeli hostages who were released late on Saturday were siblings, Noam and Alma Orr, aged 17 and 13. In the 7th of October attacks, they were separated from their parents and taken to Gaza. Their father is missing and their mother was killed in the attack. Well, for more, we're joined on the line by their uncle, Ahal Besarai. And Ahal, you've been speaking to them. Can you explain to us what they told you happened on the 7th of October?
Okay, so they were all hiding in the safety room in their home on the kibbutz. Terrorists broke in. They stayed inside. Terrorists set fire to the house to force them out of the safety room. The children jumped from the window of the safety room and tried to hide in a balcony in the neighbor's. The terrorists found them there, took them, just the children. They drove them to Gaza.
Mm-hmm. And they weren't aware what had happened to their mother, your sister.
Exactly so. So when they came back, they were met by the older brother, Yali, who was not on the kibbutz on the day. And by the grandmother and psychological support staff. And the first piece of news that they encountered was that their mom was murdered on October 7th.
And we can only imagine what that was like for them. How was your conversation with them? How are they?
They are much slimmer than when they left. But Alma came with this enormously bright smile and glittering eyes to see me on the video. So it just brought tears to my eyes to see the strength of in that 13-year-old girl and her ability to master a smile. And it wasn't a fake smile. It was just a joyful smile. And then I chatted for maybe 20 minutes to Noam, you know, just to figure out what happened, whether they know anything about Drew, the father. But they have not been together with him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we hoped that the release would shed some more light on his whereabouts and fate, but that wasn't the case.
So you have no information about him at all?
We have information that he is presumed to be a hostage, but more than that, no.
I was reading a report this morning where you said that you had decided with your family not to go into the details of what happened to your niece and your nephew over the course of their captivity. Will you explain your logic for making that decision?
Yes. What they told me, or what Noam told me, is that the experience in captivity wasn't necessarily a pleasant one. And I didn't want to go into details of what that meant, because there are many other parents in Israel whose loved ones are in captivity and they don't need to worry more or, you know, get news that might cause them distress and worry. Mm-hmm. So I decided not to go into it. One day, when everything is revealed, this story will be told, I'm sure.
And they were kept in captivity with another woman, and I see that they formed a close bond with her, but she hasn't been released.
That is absolutely correct. So when I asked Noam, how did you survive, or how did you manage the strength to go through everything? So he said that they basically supported each other.
And What can you tell us about the process around their release? When did they realize that they were going to be allowed home?
So on the day of the release, from my understanding, they didn't want the lady that stayed behind to know that they are going to be released. So they took them out and to the restroom. And then once they were out, they handcuffed them, blindfolded them with a tape, and basically then told them that they are going to be released, took them to a car outside, and whisked them to wherever the handover to the Red Cross happened.
Mm-hmm. And we can only imagine they have a long road to go now in terms of reaching a point where they will have recovered from this. And I'm mindful of the things that you haven't told us today.
Yeah, it is a process. But I felt, you know, talking to them, that they have this reservoir of strength that I think probably all humans have. The day-to-day life doesn't ask you to resort to, but this situation in which they found themselves demanded that. And they had the skill and ability to access this reservoir of strength. And this, I believe, is one of the reasons why they stayed sane, and also one of the reasons why they would overcome it more or less unharmed.
Ahal, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning, and I'm so glad that you have your niece and nephew back with you, and let's hope that their father is released soon too. Thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, to take a closer look at the ongoing efforts to extend the four-day ceasefire, I'm joined on the line by The Guardian's diplomatic editor, Patrick Winter. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
So we're hearing suggestions that the four-day truce could be extended now, but how likely is that, do you think? How long could an extended ceasefire go on for?
Well, first of all, I just think, given the kind of gut-wrenching, painful story you just had on your program, that is being reproduced throughout Israel in various ways. So there's a huge emotional pressure upon the Israeli government to get more of the hostages released. And I think that is the kind of prevalent view inside Israel. It's clear that President Joe Biden would like the ceasefire to be extended, and Hamas have also said that they would like to do so for various motives. So I think you could see another 3 to 4 days extension of the ceasefire, but it's going to get progressively more difficult because of the nature of the hostages that Hamas holds, and that, in a way, to use a horrible term, the sort of low-hanging fruit that in terms of the hostages that could be released, women and children, is going to come to an end. And then there's going to be more complex cases involving members of the military, and sometimes at quite senior level. And I expect at that point Hamas will demand more than just 1-3 relationship proportionality in terms of the number of Palestinians released. Mm-hmm. There will also be pressure from the humanitarian agencies for this ceasefire to continue, because they're only getting a very relatively small amount of aid into Gaza, and they need a lot longer given the kind of chaos they are in meeting when they get into Gaza. So there's going to be a variety of different groups pressing for an extension of the ceasefire.
But you've got to imagine that those negotiations around the more complicated hostage releases are already happening, would you say?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure that there are sort of, there's probably two groups of negotiators. There's one group that is just dealing with each day's naming of prisoners and getting a checklist agreed with the other side. And then there's a more strategic group that are thinking, what can we do here in terms of building on this ceasefire? Is it something that's really just going to go for another 3 days and then it's back to fighting? Or is there a mechanism, some means, whereby they can persuade both Hamas and Israel that it's in their long-term future strategic interest to extend the ceasefire. And that is the much more difficult negotiation to have. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, Israel themselves have said that this is not going to be like previous bouts of violence inside Gaza. This has got to be the be-all and end-all, once and for all, elimination of Hamas. And they've certainly not achieved that yet. So they, if that remains their goal, then they will have to return to the fighting. I think there's a gradual feeling in America that there isn't ultimately a military solution to this, that certainly you can weaken Hamas hugely, but you can't eliminate them. So there comes a point when you have to say to the Israelis, this is time to declare victory, you've done as well as you can. And whether the Israelis are in a mood to do so, given what has happened to their country and the state of shock they're in.
Well, it certainly seems unlikely. And of course, they have the additional concern, which Israel has expressed time and again, that the longer the ceasefire goes on, the more time Hamas has to regroup.
Well, both sides can argue that. I mean, I think Israel's got time to regroup strategically, try to think a bit more about where the remaining commanders that they want are. And there's this very big problem that Israel faces, which is they have pretty well obliterated the north of Gaza. They're pushing people to the south. And if you've got 1 to 2 million people in a very small area, at what point will those people not want to push over into the border into Egypt, which is the great fear that Cairo has, that they're absolutely opposed to these refugees coming into Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so people talk of safe zones and safe areas, but there's going to be very small areas, and you're going to have a million people living in tents inside Gaza. Is that sustainable? Probably not.
Patrick, can you explain something to us? Because people might have heard that the Qatari Prime Minister told the Financial Times that Hamas might not know where some of these hostages are, that there are up to 40 women and children being kept captive in Gaza, but not being held by Hamas. What's going on there?
Well, I think you have to take that with a pinch of salt, but it is true there are other Islamic groups inside Gaza. So Hamas is the certainly the dominant group, but they are alleging there's 30 to 40 hostages, which they don't know the precise location of, and they're held by other groups, either sort of Palestinian Islamic Jihad or just simply by other families, because more than it wasn't just that Hamas went over the border during this killing spree and took back people. There were other groups there. But I find it slightly unlikely, given how long this war's been going on, that Hamas simply doesn't know where all the hostages are. I would have thought they would have some pretty clear sense of where they are. There is a legitimate question about whether Hamas can persuade these other groups to give up their hostages. And it slightly depends upon the nature of the people they've got and also in what condition they are, because I think there are some that have been held in much more miserable conditions than others.
Patrick, it's good to talk to you, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us this morning. That's Patrick Wintour, who is The Guardian's diplomatic editor. We'll be back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.